The Specialist Phil and Will are back, and today we are taking a little break from Survivor 50 content. Instead, we're going to actually offer up solutions to our complaints as we try to fix the traitors. Will and I were very, very realistic about what the traitors was offering to us during season two. It had its highs, it had its lows, and we called out a lot of the problems. And you know, we got some likes on those videos. We got some people commenting that we should stop watching shows that we absolutely hate. But there's a lot of potential here. We just want it to be better.
I don't think either of us hate the traitors. I think it's a show we both really enjoy and think is really compelling in a lot of ways. And I know the title of this podcast or video is how to fix the traitors, as if it's like completely, you know, broken and not working. And I want to start out by saying I don't believe that's the case. I just believe there's a lot of room for improvement, and we will discuss opportunities on how to make the show better, because we really do enjoy the show. Obviously, they cast a wide variety of people, some people that we know from Survivor and other shows that we enjoy. It's a social deduction game that we like. So there are a ton of things. The setting's great. Alan's great. So there's so many things working well for the show. And maybe we should even start with that by addressing what is working and then go into, okay, what isn't working? And then how do we fix those specific things that aren't working? Because I could see some people saying this, like, the traitors, why are we fixing it? Like, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. It's one of the, you know, highest rated, most critically acclaimed reality competition shows going right now. Only two seasons in. We're very early on this, but there are problems. So I do want to just kind of address that. We aren't just like out here just hating on it. We are doing this out of love because it's a show we enjoy.
And unfortunately, you have to play the YouTube algorithm game a little bit with that. Or like, if I put how to improve the traders, you're not going to get that click the same as if you
how to improve the traders. I mean, that could work. How to make the traders better. But yeah, that's our goal here, is to talk through some of the issues and provide fixes and solutions for them. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to start off by talking about one thing that the traders did fix from season one to season two. And I think it was a fix in the correct direction, which was, they just went all in on casting reality TV stars. And I think you have to do a show like this. You either have to have all reality TV stars or all newbies. You can't have half and half. You can't have a show like this and really have it work where the newbies were just so overshadowed in the original game. They didn't know how to play the game. By the end of it, we see Ceree just duping all of them because they really don't have an understanding of how the reality TV world works. And this is a big change. I mean, you're putting a lot of money into appearance fees and stuff like that for some of these bigger names that you're getting. It's not just based on prize money for how far you go. Like, there's definitely appearance fees attached to some of this stuff. So that's a big change from a financial standpoint. And it really worked for the show. Obviously, you're always going to have the issues of somebody like Dan Gheesling and Parvati. They're going to have bigger targets on their back than some of the housewives coming into the season. But I feel like you still have to make that decision and say it's all got to be one or it's got to be the other. It can't be split down the middle. So that was one big change they made from season one to two. So I want to give them their props first before we dive into some
other stuff. Then they made some other changes. I think, you know, selecting the two initial traders and then those two people selecting a third trader was something that worked really well. Shields were incredible. And I think when we get to talk to challenges, I think they need to incorporate that more. And I think we saw a willingness from the show from season one to season two to say, hey, we're not like happy and content with the way the show is in its current state, and that they are willing to make pretty significant changes to how the show works. So That's at least a very good sign.
Yeah, I think that the Shields were probably the one that put in my head of they understand part of the game is broken. Like, they understood that the challenges needed to have more reason. You don't think so?
I honestly think the Shield, the glory we got from Peter's plan in the Shields, I honestly, and I could be totally wrong on this, and I think I said this when we were recapping, I think it was kind of an accident how it all happened together, because you can see in the early episodes of season two that they made it very public when players would attempt to get a shield. Yeah. That was always kind of the way, and in season one, I believe, it was kind of how the challenges worked. And I don't know, do we want to start with challenges here? I guess we're already diving in.
I mean, challenges are, I think, the biggest, probably one of the biggest problems of the show.
Right. So just to continue this Shield thought is that, and I see why they did this for both seasons one and early season two, is like, oh my gosh, you can see who's going for the Shields and who's like not playing for the team pot and the money. And then that can cause conflict and drama. Like if I'm doing this challenge and I'm like busting my ass to lift this heavy thing so that the whole group can get more money. And then Phil goes over there and runs for individual Shield immunity, essentially. I'm like, screw Phil. And that could provide a lot of good conflict.
Yeah.
Cool. I think it was an accident that I forget what challenge it was, but it was, you know, probably halfway through the season that the players basically, and maybe this was the production too, being like, wait a second, the way this challenge worked, we didn't get this, like the other players didn't see who got the Shield. And then I'm pretty sure like the players either told Alan or Alan said who got a Shield and the players didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And then that led to a gameplay plan, a strategic.
Yeah, that was the one with Fergie and all of them. Yep.
Yeah. And they're like, we aren't going to make it known who has the Shields. And now the traitors have to take a shot in the dark. And then we're going to plant a trap and we're going to tell the people we suspect of being a traitor that these are the people that have the Shields, when in reality it wasn't. And that was, I mean, that was the highlight of the season, that Shield trap that Peter put out there. And I don't think this was coming from the show in production. Like, hey, if we make Shields an unknown entity, it will create two more strategic gameplay. I just don't see that causing, like, the way that the Shields were initially set up and the way it seemed kind of like a surprise to Alan that these were going to be not, like, this information wasn't going to be disclosed, seemed like it just kind of fell into their lap. And I do think that now that we've seen it happen and how intriguing it was, we need to see more of it.
And I think for me, the Shield improvement that I saw the most, not even so much that, was just the fact that there were options. There were options going on at the challenges, because in the challenges in season one, the Shields weren't like a part of it, because you remember, like, they would go in and they'd pull the Shield out of the box. They had like the boxes set up and then whoever opened the box with the Shield was getting it. I feel like,
oh yeah, and like Ari got like every single.
He shield. Kept getting them. I feel like if you,
but this how was he earning? Were you earning like opportunities for it in the challenge?
You could, I think, if you were it's on like, you like, had, a, like a chance team or something. Yeah. But I still like the idea of, you know, at least in this challenge, there is something with a Shield, something that can protect you if you feel like you're going to be the one who is murdered tonight. Because that was definitely my biggest problem with season one. There was no way to protect yourself if you felt like you were going to be murdered.
Right. And I am kind of like, again, season one to me, I really don't remember that well at all. But yes, going from season one, there were Shields, but in season two, we put the Shields in the challenges. And I'm hoping season three is we put Shields in the challenges and we lean into them being like it being unknown who has them. And then you can give them away. You can pass them. I think it just adds this really unique mechanic where it is kind of a cat and mouse game. And I know that's kind of what the Traitors is anyway. Like, Phil, I think you're a traitor. And you go, no, I'm not. You must be. And it's like, what are we? We're just going to talk in circles back and forth. And maybe that's a little too similar with the Shield and people don't know. It's like, okay, I have a Shield. Am I going to give it to Phil or am I going to keep it for myself? But at least with that, there's like, you at least are reading people. You're trying to predict what players are going to do.
You're essentially passing a hidden immunity idol back and forth, except it's the super idol. That's pretty much what
Are hidden immunity idols, and you basically need to put it on the person who you think the traitors are going to murder. That is your goal, and you need to trick them into selecting somebody. And this will definitely make the game harder for the traitors. The more Shields that are in the game and the more Shields that are unknown will make it more difficult. But it just adds a completely new layer of strategy that clearly worked last season. And the fact that these challenges, we've said now this whole second season, they just lack any meaning or suspense because they're playing the stakes of the challenges are how much money we're putting into a group pot that we don't even know who's going to win. We know that these people are already relatively famous enough to be returning to, like, coming on the Traitors. They've been on other shows, they've had success, so we're not like, oh my gosh, these people really need the money. And I'm not saying You know,
I bet some people's appearance fees were higher than what Trishel and CT split at the end of last season.
That sometimes is actually illegal. You usually have to, like, the prize money, and it's weird because the traders, they don't know what the prize money is going to be, and you don't know how many ways you're splitting it. Like, a sole person, and maybe that was a loophole they could use, like, hey, there's a chance for you to win this as a sole winner, like Sari did, and if you have that opportunity, that's our max. And then
so we'll pay you under $208,000 because one person could have won that, but CT and Trishel split $104,000. So there's somebody on that season who could have won $150,000 or just been gifted $150,000 for showing up.
Right. It's probably a lot. But yeah, this comes, I think this came up in like a tennis tournament where basically it's like the players, famous tennis players, were like played or paid to come play in the tournament. And like, if their fee to come play like is greater than the amount, like the purse, the prize money for winning first place, then the competition loses integrity because not everyone that is incentivized to win evenly. And so that does become an issue. I don't know if they're getting paid so much. Either way is that we don't care about how much money is in the pot. I mean, if you're watching and you really do, I guess good for you. I've said it completely. Like, it doesn't, like, I don't care, especially we don't know who's going to win. It's like the challenges should offer more stakes, stakes that we actually care about that are going to pay off at the end of the episode we're watching. Like, we're watching some challenge and it's like, this isn't going to pay off until the finale. And like, I know the finale is exciting. It's big. They're going to win money. I don't care how much money they're going
to win. Well, and the way they
really should just be a base prize. It should be $300,000 or $250,000 and you can split it or you can figure out how to win it on your own. We don't need to be like, you know, tracking the amount that's in this pot because we just don't care.
Well, and so this brings up my next question, which is in the first season of the show, they tried to pitch it as you're going to sabotage, like you might sabotage during the challenge if you're a trader, which makes no sense because you're playing for the same pot. So you want to get as much money in there anyway. We don't care about the money. That was our biggest complaint all during season two, is that the money aspect of it made the challenges literally fast forward worthy. There was no reason to watch the challenges unless there was a shield that could be obtained and then people go do it. I think there's going to be a shield in every single challenge this season, but I just want to start with that. How can they still have challenges on this show and make it meaningful and make it so that this doesn't essentially just become like a Survivor-esque game of, you win immunity, you're safe. Three people are now going to decide who to vote out, but they can't vote you out. Like, how do they prevent that? Is there a way to prevent that, or is that fine?
I think it's more fine. Like, if they just do like, hey, we're going to do an immunity challenge, and three of you who win become safe, and then you can give your shields away to whoever you want, or you can keep them. That already is way more interesting and has way more stakes than, okay, we're all going to play as a team for a group pot that's going to fluctuate and we're always going to be able to win the money back. And these people already have money anyway, and it's not that much money if we're splitting it three ways. So like, even if they just do a straight up immunity challenge, already better. Like, that could easily be a fix. And some people might be saying, oh, well, that's too much like Survivor. Well, like, that's like every show. Okay. People, yeah. You play challenges to win safety. That's kind of how these shows work. And the Traders has enough unique factors going on outside of the challenge specifically that I don't think anyone's going to look like, no, now it's just a carbon copy of Survivor. It's like, no, not at all. It's got its own distinct aesthetic and vibe. It has its own mechanics with banishment and murders. It has its own thing with the finale, the fire ceremony, or the whatever is of truth or whatever that is. So it's not like you need to make every format aspect of the show super unique. Like, rely on what's worked already. I am not opposed to that, Phil. I think that already would be a major, major improvement. Another way they could go, and people have suggested this, and I think the only reason they don't do this is because they don't want to be similar to another show, but is to go the route of the mole. And the mole works where everyone's playing for a pot of money. Everyone's on the same team, except one person is the mole, and they are trying to sabotage the group. Now, the mole is a little bit, it's difficult because you're watching the show the whole time, and basically the mole is giving you confessionals as a innocent person. Like, their confessionals are not honest. It's an actor. And the mole is also like not, I don't believe, it's not like a contestant that's like monetarily incentivized. It's just kind of like an extension of the show to mess with people. And that's where it gets a little like, okay, what are we really doing here? But it is entertaining and it is compelling. But if you have the traitors giving them actually a monetary incentive to sabotage, then that becomes way more interesting. Well, and it's not really that I care how much money they're getting, but I care on ways that they're actually building up a pot for themselves that starts at zero. Like any money, I think we had a comment here that said a completely separate pot for failing missions could also work.
I was just going to say, would you, do you think that splitting it up, and I'm just going to use 500,000 as an easy round number, so just bear with me on this. We'll call it $500,000. Do you think that if they started this game off where it was like $300,000 for the faithfuls, $200,000 for the traitors, or even $500,000 entirely for the faithfuls, and every time the traitors are able to get something right, to get a faithful to vote out faithfuls, a faithful goes home at the round table, $50,000 of that goes over to the traders. And now the traders pot is $50,000 and the other one is down to $450,000. And that keeps working. So now the traders pot is actually bigger than the other pot, which might also incentivize at the end of the game. It's if there's no traders amongst all of you, like, or if you're all faithful, maybe you can split up some of the pot that's with the traders. But I'm just trying to think, like, would that, would something like that make sense of there are two separate pots, so there is a little bit more incentive to getting them to vote faithfuls out of the game so that Dan and Parvati, or Parvati and Phaedra might not be looking at Dan, and Dan might not try to throw Phaedra under the bus. Like, does that make sense? Or is that, I know that's not really into the challenges. That's more of just with the prize money. But then I feel like there's something you can do with the challenges on top of that too.
Yeah, I think two pots might be a little just annoying to track. Like, I still think there should just be like kind of what you just said, to make it simple for us while talking about this and podcasting about it, make it simple for the audience, for everyone. $300,000 grand prize, you know, like, or $500,000 grand prize. It's a big enough show where they can afford a $500,000 pot, and then it's split however it's split at the end of the game. But we had Noah Salmon here say any lost money by the team goes in the bad guys' pots, meaning if we're doing a challenge and the traders are trying to build up their pot, whatever is not earned goes to the traders. And then there's the intrigue of sabotage. And that is, again, it's very much like the mole, and probably why they don't do that, because they don't want to just be like a carbon copy. But at this point, the mole had a great run back in the early 2000s. It came back for a season on Netflix. I don't think it's returning for a season two. It was like, okay. I don't think it really caught on. So the traitors as kind of this hit show right now, I don't think needs to worry about feeling too similar to any other shows. So I would not be opposed to that. It also plays up the story and the whole kind of like, there are traitors and the traitors aren't here. Just, we're calling them traitors and they're traitors. It's actually them being traitors. It's actually them sabotaging. Like, it fits so well thematically. And then when you go to vote to banish, you actually want to eliminate traitors because they are preventing you from increasing your money. And again, it's not really about the total, but if it starts at zero and you need to build up this pot and the traitors are preventing you from doing that, then they are actually being traitorous and you actually want them eliminated. Something we talked about a bunch in season two is that the ideal strategy for this game is to figure out who the traitors are and then not eliminate them. Then eliminate other faithful, keep them in long enough so that when you do eliminate them, they are not able to recruit or add somebody to their side. Because at this current state, when you eliminate a traitor, they're quickly able to just recruit another. And then it's like, what was, now your work is all wasted because you now have to start from scratch, like deducting and detecting who is the new trader, and you have no information to go on. So now we're kind of getting outside of challenges here. But I do think the sabotage element is worth discussing. What do you think about a sabotaging challenge?
I love the idea of sabotage. I think the big change that the traders would need to make at that point is the prizes would have to be much larger for each challenge. Like, rather than a $30,000 challenge, it would have to be more of like a $60,000 challenge, because at the end of the day, they'd have to equal out their prizes to get as high as 500, because the traders would either be splitting the 250 or the other side would be splitting the 250. Now, maybe they could go higher or lower, but at the end of the day, it's going to average out to maybe about somewhere between $300,000 because you still need to incentivize. Like I was looking at it from last season. In the first challenge, it was $30,000 and they won all the money. In the next challenge, it was $20,000. Only $4,000 of it wasn't earned. So now you have $50,000 to $4,000. The next one, it was $500. But a lot of these prizes are just $20,000, $15,000, like things like that, where it's going to take a lot of work now for both sides to build up those pots. So they probably have to do that for more money. But I think it does make much more compelling TV of watching a challenge because we know the traders. And that's one of the flaws of the game is that we do know the traders because right now it's I know who the traders are and I'm watching this challenge and it doesn't mean anything. But if now we know that somebody's going to try to sabotage something, imagine Sandra as a trader. They think she's sabotaging, but really she just sucks at challenges. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing with the mole too, is that like they design the challenges in a way where it's like they're not super easy. Like they are difficult. So when people are really bad, it's like, wait, are they just bad at the challenge or are they the mole and trying to sabotage? And I think, you know, if the traders is trying to get away from the mole comparison, that the audience knowing who the traders are actually helps them there because then it's like the audience is in on it and we get to see Dan, Phaedra, and Parv sabotaging the challenge and like we are now ahead of the faithful and it's kind of fun. We're like in on the joke as opposed to the mole where you're kind of playing along with everybody in the game and trying to actively deduce who the mole is out of all the players. You're kind of with them in their POV. But here, this would be like you're in on the joke. You're a step ahead of them. And that's different than the mole. So I think they could go that route. But it's clear they do want to stay away from mole comparisons.
Yeah, for sure. I just feel like, you know, when you're making a reality TV show at this point, you're going to get comparisons to a lot of the classics. And I understand where that's coming from. I think the traders, what separates it is you do have multiple people. You do have like the visual of everything that's going on. But I feel like the challenges, what kills me when I sit down to watch the traders is so much that it's a 45 minute episode.
It's like an hour now.
Are they like an hour? Whatever.
Yeah, they're pretty long.
One third of that is dedicated to the challenge. And those challenges are doing nothing for me at all.
The challenges themselves are not bad. Like they're kind of cool and they're like, they vibey, they fit the aesthetic. Like they're not poorly executed and produced challenges, like the goals and the games and all that. It's the stakes. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to get that.
No, out. And I totally agree with you. They look really, really good. And I think that's part of the disappointment. Part of the disappointment is that they do look so damn good. And they look so good. And they take up a large portion of the episode. And then it ends and you say, oh, okay. I'm watching for the first time Australian Survivor for our patrons right now. And I'm releasing episodes every Friday. And in Australian Survivor 2016, they have an episode where they do a reward challenge. Then they go to Tribal Council and do another reward challenge. And that is the entire episode of Australian Survivor 2016. Like that is one full episode. It's two reward challenges. Nobody gets voted out. No immunity challenge, nothing like that. So you can't help but sit there after watching that episode and say, it doesn't matter how good these challenges were. It doesn't matter how revealing these challenges were. I just watched two challenges and nothing else. It didn't actually impact what was happening in the game. And this could have been an email. It didn't have to be a meeting. And I feel like that's so much of what goes on with the traders. It feels like these are cool. Sometimes they're very revealing. We got to watch Kate throw a temper tantrum last season. That's always fun, but it doesn't mean that there's no purpose to it. Like it's like watching a TV show and you just spent 20 minutes on characters who you never see again. And you say, why did I spend 20 minutes with them? It had nothing to do with anything. I don't need to watch them drink their coffee while, you know, we're worried about the Oceanic 815 flight over on the island. Like it makes no sense. It's so stupid.
Mm-hmm. We have a comment here. Willie D says, pretty sure season 2 of The Mole is dropped on Netflix today.
Wow.
So there we go. If you want, should we do some podcasting on that, Phil?
I never watched the first season of The Mole.
It was okay. It was fun. Like, it wasn't amazing.
And these are just, we're just talking two seasons of The Mole on Netflix, right? Because there were a lot of seasons of The Mole back in the day.
Right. That I'm just surprised it took them this long to put a season 2 out. Because I think that was like, the first season came out in 2021. Or 2022, I want to say. And so it's just, I thought it was not renewed just because, like, where has the second season been? It just took forever. October 7th, 2022. So I guess not quite full 2 years, but
almost though. I mean, you're talking your end of June.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty close. Especially for a reality show, you can pound those out pretty quick. Like, exactly. You can, if you have a really successful one, you can turn that around.
Exactly. If you're going to renew it, you renew it quickly and you keep the excitement up to like wait almost 2 years between airing seasons. Kind of funny. Yeah. All right. I think we've talked about challenges enough. I mean, any other suggestions? Like, again, Phil, I'm not opposed to being like, you got like three of you are going to win a shield and it's an individual challenge, or we split into teams where it's like, all right, we have four teams of four, you know, when we have like 16 people left and one team is going to win shields. And then those players have the opportunity to divvy those shields out. Hey, maybe that's too many.
I would like to see the opportunity though, with challenges, if somebody wins a challenge that they can't be banished, like they can save themselves from a banishment, because I do feel like the banishment ceremonies can get pretty predictable. Once everybody kind of piles on, if the person's not getting murdered, then they say, hey, let's do this. We saw that with Peter last season. Peter survived a couple and then they all said, no, we got to banish him eventually. And it would have been nice if he could have had some way of saving himself. Because even if he had a shield, shields just protect you from being murdered. Like, maybe there is something in these challenges, like a super shield that saves you from one or the other, whichever you need first.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, there's two types of shields, or we just call something different. Like, yeah, I don't know. Something where, yeah, you can prevent the banishment also. And you'd have to play it like an idol. Or maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's not like a challenge thing. Maybe it's just like an advantage where it's like you have it and you have to decide if you think you're being banished when to play it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the next thing I think I want to jump to is, I think there does need to be, and you already hinted at this a little bit, a way to de-incentivize these people, or I guess maybe just incentivize, whichever way you want to go with this, but for the faithfuls to not vote out other faithfuls. I think it's a big problem that this turns into an alliance-based game, because the whole point of the traitor is supposed to be find the traitors. But the problem is, you find the traitors, you vote out a traitor, they renew the traitor. And like you said, well, really the best way to run this is to play the traitors, find a traitor, and then don't vote them out until you get down to like final seven, so that they can't recruit anybody, so they can't do it. You already know it's them. There needs to be a way that the faithfuls are punished, legitimately punished, for voting out a faithful. Because we saw it at the end of last season. Sandra made it all the way to final five or six or whatever it was. Sandra never is one of the last people standing at the end of the game. They are always going to vote Sandra out of the game before they allow the money to be split, because they're not going to trust her. There needs to be something that punishes the people for voting out faithfuls throughout. And that's where I almost think they should start with money and lose money rather than start at zero and earn money. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I could see either one. Again, ideally for me, I think in my perfect version of the traitors, and we'd have to figure out a lot of other aspects that we'll talk through, but like in my ideal version is just we have a pot of, you have a prize. It's not even a pot. It's just a prize of $300,000, $250,000, $400,000, whatever. It's one number and it's unchanging and it's simple and you're playing to win a share of that money. Yeah. And if it's $500,000, it's like, all right, we're going to split this with, if you split it with three people, you know, you're getting what, $166,000. Like, that's pretty good. Or if you win it solely, you can get a $500,000 solo win. That's great. I think that's probably the cleanest, best version of this show, is that we don't need to manipulate the amount of money. One. However, if we are, you do bring up a good point. How do we prevent faithful being like, okay, I just need an alliance. It doesn't matter who a traitor or a faithful is. Their roles are insignificant. I just need the numbers so that I stay here.
Because it's cheesy. It's cheesy to listen to them sit at the banishment roundtable and say, well, I think you're a traitor. When in reality, well, you're just not in my alliance. That's why I want to vote you out. And it feels like they have to try to find that talking point of traitor, traitor, traitor. But really it's, well, Sandra, you don't fit into my situation, so I just want you out of the game.
Yeah, here's a comment from Willie D. I think if they don't fix a few things, the longevity is what is.
I agree.
And I think that's a great point, because season two is really highly revered people loved it. Critics, fans, like everyone was like, this is the best show on TV. Cannot wait. But if we keep with the same format, the players are going to get smart to how to actually play the game. And then we're going to lose the roles having significance, mm-hmm. like you're saying. I almost wonder, and this is kind of going against my point, if I think there should just be a fixed pot, but I wonder if it's like, if you have a personal pot and like every time you vote for a trader, you get $10,000 added to your prize pot. And so then it's like, you can't just vote based on your alliance or like throw away. A lot of people will throw a rogue vote just to like not pick a side and not ruffle feathers. Or rustle feathers, I should say, since we're you know, the specialists.
You know what could be interesting with that? I actually like this, and it's just making me think. Like, let's say you had $30,000, because this will make it easier to split up. And Will gets voted out. We banish Will, and he's a faithful. If you vote out a faithful, half of their money just gets disappeared, and the other $15,000 could be split evenly between people.
I think you want to go the other way. I think you want to reward success. So it's like, basically, if you have someone who is like dead on and just voting for the trader every single time, their value goes up. So let's say, Phil, you are like just sure that Alexa is a trader. Okay. Uh-huh. And clearly
she's not here to defend herself.
That's why you banished her from the podcast, uh-huh. Phil. But you're sure Alexa is a trader and you vote for her 5 banishment ceremonies in a row. Uh-huh. And on the 5th one, finally, everyone's like, you know what? Phil's been right. Vote banish Alexa. Alexa stands in the circle of truth. She says, guys, I'm a traitor. Everyone's like, yeah, finally. Now we have everyone who just cast a vote to banish Alexa has $10,000. But you, Phil, you have $50,000. Then at the end of the game, if the faithful win and they're able to get all the traitors out, you add up all of the value that every faithful has, and then you divvy it up. So now what you've done, Phil, is not only up the prize pot for the faithful, you've now made yourself a pretty safe person when it comes to banishment, because then people are like, I don't want to banish Phil. I want to go to the end with Phil because he's got $50,000 to the pot and I want to have a slice of that.
Yeah.
Now it does maybe get a little murky where it's like, okay, the traders are, do they want to banish Phil or not for that? Maybe they have their own thing going, or maybe they want you. I don't know. I just feel like
traders should lose money if a trader goes home.
Yeah. I mean, maybe again, I think the best version is just not even altering the prize fund. But now that we're talking about this, I just think you should be rewarded every time you cast a vote correctly for a trader. That should be.
And you're not told right away. Like, I could vote for Alexa, and because Alexa doesn't go home, I don't know that I get more money. But then when Alexa does go home, if you've accumulated enough votes on that person, you get rewarded. Because I think that's the biggest problem right now is you vote out a faithful. The prize pot, honestly, everybody's prize pot goes up every time a faithful is eliminated. Because that means not only is a faithful gone, that also now means a faithful is going to be murdered. So now 2 people are gone. Great. I just went up by their 2 percentages are now split between the remaining 19 or whatever the hell is left. And that's great. That's a reward for being wrong. And if the name of the game is vote these people out, there needs to be a punishment. And I think that's the biggest problem with the game right now is that it is, they want to stay away from maybe something like Survivor, but they're playing an alliance-based game. That's all it is. It is an alliance-based game under this fake mantra of the traitors, the traitors, the traitors, and there needs to be something done. And I like your idea of making it so that each individual person gets their own amount of money. But even if that's too complicated, there is a non-convoluted way to do this that the people who are getting paid all this money to work on the show should be able to come up with.
Right. And I wonder what other ways can we incentivize people to actually vote out traitors when they have a traitor correct? I mean, like, you, maybe it's very clear you get to recruit the traitors will have one chance to recruit during the season and that's it. Mm-hmm. I think that's another really tough part of the show. We talked about it when recapping. It's like this show has to go a certain amount of episodes, but the nature of the game mechanics allows for basically the traitors to be dwindled, like be completely eliminated before we've shot enough episodes. So then we just have to keep recruiting traitors. And then it's like, wait a second, if we're going to just keep recruiting traitors, why are we even banishing them in the first place?
Well, and so, here we go. What if you, this is again where I think you start with money. What if you start with $500,000? And if you get a traitor on the first one, the pot stays. It doesn't go down. But if you vote out a faithful, it goes down by whatever amount. Let's say $25,000, because eventually you get down to zero. So now you're down to $475,000. Maybe it's $50,000. It goes down to $450,000. And now every time you vote out a faithful, it goes down. But if you vote out a traitor, it doesn't go down. Because what that does is that also eliminates the problem of they keep recruiting traitors. But if you keep getting the traitors right, the prize pot stays the same. And the amount of people who are still left in the game are splitting that high amount of prize money, rather than being incentivized to say, oh, well, if we vote out a faithful, the amount of people I have to split with goes down. So that's good. If they're going to keep recruiting traders, the amount of people you're going to split with is going to keep going down anyway, but the prize money will stay high rather than also dropping.
Yeah, I think I like that more, that if we are going to have this fluctuating prize pot, that it should be influenced by the group being successful in their banishments. That the banishment success directly influences the pot. I think that is a good way to look at this. And even if you are, like I was saying, if a person casts a vote correctly, you know, give them more money. Maybe that adds to the prize pot. But what you're saying is more simple, I think. It's, hey, if you eliminate a faithful, you're going to lose money. And if you eliminate a traitor, let's increase the pot. Yeah. And then that way, okay, you recruit, but now we have an opportunity to make more money due to the recruiting. The only weird thing with that is then like what prize pot is the traders playing for? Like they would just need to have a separate prize. That is not in, cause then it's like, okay, why is the prize pot going up for the traders when they just lost some?
Yeah. And maybe for the traders, maybe it's always locked in at $100,000 and you either get 50, 75 or 150, depending on if you're splitting it with all three or something like that. Like, I don't know, like maybe there's a way to do that. But then again, you do want to incentivize the traders. So maybe if all three of you make it through, you all get $150,000. Maybe it is just locked in at $150,000 per trader. If you win solo, you get 150. If you win with two, you get 150 each. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I honestly think that, and people might be like, whoa. There's the most interesting part of this is when you're down to a few traders and now they have to start turning on each other because they want to split the pot, or because they don't want to split the pot.
That shouldn't be entertaining.
It's entertaining and it's interesting, but it's not the point of the show. It's not the premise of traders versus faithful. Like their own groups turning on each other. While it may be dramatic and there's conflict and there's strategy to it, it doesn't fit with what the show has told us that it is. And I think it's more. Yep. I want to see the traders scheme and work together more to have success and not be like, okay, I'm going to just turn on my own trader to save my ass. I mean, that works a little bit, but if I think when we went down to the end last season, something that, you know, there was amazing parts of that finale. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But when we got down to CT, Trish and MJ, it's like, okay, there's only faithfuls left. It's called the traitors. You've just eliminated the last traitor in Kate. She's gone. That should like end the game. Now, again, like, I think I said this. It was like we shifted our whole narrative track from find the traitors, eliminate the traitors to now we're going to play a mini game of trust, a game of greed, where it's like we're going to just see who's greedy enough and how we're going to eliminate and split the money, which is just not the...
It's you should lose money by voting out a faithful at that final ceremony.
I think so, right? I think it's better if we make the teams actually go against each other. And this might work for a couple seasons without that, but the players are going to eventually game this and be like, it's all about just forming an alliance. Like, who cares what your role is?
As soon as you get the call that you're on the traitors, especially these are reality TV personalities, they know how to play it, and the housewives are no longer going to come in not knowing what's going on. Like, everybody who comes and plays the traders is going to have talked to somebody who has played the traders, and they're going to know what's going on, and they're going to get on the phone and they're going to say, who else is playing? Great. Let's start making a pregame alliance. It doesn't matter if you're a trader. Like Jeremy, Tony, and Carolyn should all have alliances this season. Of course they should. There's no reason they shouldn't. And I feel like that is not what you want this show to be. So I feel like, you know, because the problem is at the end too, let's say the prize is $450,000 and they eliminate MJ. So they eliminate her portion of the prize. Maybe that's what you do. So you're not actually being incentivized to get rid of that. Cause now your prize didn't go up from 150 to 225. It just stayed at 150 because you lost her portion of that because you got rid of a faithful. So it de-incentivizes you from voting those people out. And then you end up in a situation like Ceree was in, and Ceree just takes the whole prize. So if you're the traitor, then you get whatever it is. I don't know. I just feel like it doesn't make sense. I think it makes more sense that the faithful should be punished if they vote a faithful out in the end game, like they were doing last season. Because like you said, it's just the trust, a game of greed. And the trust, a game of greed is not a very good show.
Yeah, I'm trying to crunch the numbers here on that final three. So, I mean, what was the prize pot? It was $208,000, right?
$208,000,
yep. So, at that point, you have $208,000 and you're splitting it three ways. So that $69,000, okay? So what you need to then do is, if you eliminate MJ, you remove, let's say, I think you'd have to remove $69,000, right? To get you to 139 and then divide that by two, and you're still at 69. So you'd have to remove more. Maybe it's like, if you vote out a faithful here, you will lose $100,000 from the prize pot. Then it goes to 108, divide that by two, and you're at 54,000. So now you've just lost $15,000. You're splitting the pot with fewer people, but the pot has now decreased enough where it's not financially incentive. There's no financial incentive for you. And I get, if there's people here that are like, yo, Trishelle and CT voting out off MG at the end was like the best part, and it's cutthroat and it's awesome. That's fair too. I get that if you enjoy that, or viewers enjoy that. For me, it takes away from like the whole goal and point of the show. I want to amp up the Team Traitors, Team Faithful, and not have it be so
because season two exploited that big time with it being all returning players. Season two really exploited, like, this is my friends versus your friends. It wasn't traitors versus anybody else. It was just my friends versus your friends.
Yeah. And maybe we don't see that on season three. And it was just kind of an anomaly with the personalities that they cast. But I mean, when we did our cast breakdown, it's like, it's probably going to turn into the gamers versus the Bravo people again, just because naturally, and I don't think it's like there will be pregame alliances, but also just naturally, it's kind of who you associate with and talk to. It's very easy for Survivor players to talk to other Survivor players and Big Brother players and Challenge players because they have a similar shared experience. People on Bravo shows, even if they're not on the same shows, you have like Selling Sunset and, you know, Summer House and Real Housewives. They have a similar experience being on those types of shows, and people are naturally going to, you know, form those groups. And then, like you just said, then it becomes about that and not about traitors versus faithfuls, which is ultimately what we want to see in a show titled The Traitors. Yeah. So I guess with casting too, and I think we've talked through some good fixes here, Phil, I think they need to really cast players, not that they need to all be gamers, but cast players that are capable of being gamers. We saw this last season that Phaedra, yes, a Real Housewives, not from a gaming show, she played a phenomenal game of being a traitor and was fantastic television the entire time. Great casting choice. You have people like Peter, who might have been, came out of this season as the biggest strategist and gamer of the entire season. And he was not from Big Brother, The Challenge, Survivor, Amazing Race. He was from a dating show. So it's not that we don't need to tap into these other formats and shows. It's that you need to pick the right people from these shows that you're, so you're not getting Ceree and MJ, who are not playing the game at all and don't add anything really to the overall story or season. That's what you want. You want people that are here to play and to strategize and play hard. Those people don't need to exclusively come from competition shows, but you really need to cast people that are going to be willing to game.
Yeah. Yeah. And based on what Thomas McGee is saying here, Kay, I'm okay with the winner. I'm okay with the game because I'm happy with both seasons winners. I think there should be more of an advantage for faithfuls. You have no idea what might send you home. The faithfuls are sitting ducks. So I was going to say that it seems like you're rewarded for acting like a sitting duck on the show because we see that with MJ and Sheree. Like, not that they're being like, oh, we're the next on the chopping block, but if you just play, I don't know what's going on, everybody's going to say, okay, well, that person clearly is a faithful then. And that's not good for the show. Like, that's not exciting TV for people to watch. And it also, like, this comment makes me want to go back to even the challenge aspect of everything. Because when you're talking about the gamers and everything like that, maybe what you win from winning a challenge is information about who a traitor might be. And it could be as simple as there's two men. Oh, no. Or there is one man. Like, they don't have to say there's two. There is at least one male traitor. Boom. Now you know, okay, who is that going to be? What does that mean? And maybe that's the type of information you get for winning these challenges. If you get all of it, like if you succeed in the amount of time or something like that. And then that also, again, would incentivize more gamers to want to play the game, because somebody like Kate, who's just throwing shit out the window, now they're not going to want to keep somebody like her around because she actually is impacting their ability to figure out who the traitors are. So they're going to want people who are really playing. Yeah, Phaedra was perfect casting. I don't think anybody disagrees with that one. So anyway.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That also gives traitors incentive to sabotage. Yeah. Like, we don't want them to get any information about us. How do I prevent us as a group from being successful in this mission so that they don't get a clue? Hey, one of the traitors wears glasses. And I go, oh, damn. Like, I don't want that coming out. So I'm okay with that. I think it's definitely delicate on like what those clues are, when they're revealed, and like how it fits with the rest of the cast. It's almost like Guess Who, where it's like the first version of Guess Who, for whatever reason, it was like, I don't know, like 25 to 30 pieces, players, and like only like six of them were women. And so it's like, if you said, are you a woman? Then you just put everything down. It's like not really fair at all. Yeah. So you'd have to really balance that out. And it'd be something, it would be delicate, but it would be very interesting. And again, that gives the challenge stakes. You have the faithful really wanting to get information on the traitors. You have the traitors needing to subtly sabotage challenges. And then you have people that are bad at the challenges that are like, everyone's calling them a traitor, but they're just really bad at the challenges. So that, I mean, that's always good. So,
And it could be, I don't know exactly what those things are, but I feel like there's so many avenues they could go where you walk into a challenge and you know that if the faithful are successful, they're going to get information. And if the traitor is successful, no information will be gotten. They're going to go to the round table. Now at the round table, if a faithful goes home, the prize pot goes down. If a traitor goes home, the prize pot goes up. You now have clear motivations. I mean, like, that is reality TV. That is any type of story in a nutshell, is you want to have clear motivations.
Right.
And I think, like, then it makes sense when somebody, like, I think then what that also would do is it would prevent people like Sheree, who is supposedly a huge star on her show, from playing so behind the scenes and just going along for the ride. Because now there is more incentive to be like, no, that's stupid. I actually want to make sure that we can get whatever amount of money, and then people will be more vocal, and that's what you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think we've already offered like three or four great ways to just add stakes and motivation to the challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. For
me, another big fix, and I'm surprised this hasn't come up yet, is like maybe we did talk about this with Sandra. I don't know. The finale, the way that all works. We have a banishment at 5, and then we go with the 4 people to the whatever fire ceremony.
Yeah.
At 5, they need to not reveal if the player is a faithful or a traitor, because that really just dictates who's going to win the game. Like, you know which side is going to win after that. Because if they reveal Sandra, she's a faithful, it's like, okay, now we know there's still a traitor among us. And it was basically, they were up between, it was going to be, I think, Sandra or Kate. Who are we going to banish? One of them's a traitor. We don't know who. We banish Sandra. If they aren't told, then at least Kate has some level of game she can play. Be like, yeah, we got Sandra. She's the traitor. And there, if she is trying to vibe for let's split it, we're all faithful. Instead, they reveal Sandra's faithful. And then Kate, this is why I went to the casting point. Like, you need to cast people that are capable of playing a strong strategic game. When Kate throws green, it like just completely blows her cover as a traitor. She doesn't know what she's doing. She doesn't understand the game mechanics. And that feels really not satisfying when you're watching this game all season long to be like, oh my God, our trader, our last ring trader doesn't understand the social strategy and mechanics of how this thing even works. And it's her second time playing. That doesn't feel good. So that's why I did bring up casting. But I think just the finale, you can't reveal people's identity as you get closer and closer.
I agree. To that. And I think the problem with that is if you don't reveal at five, do they just go and take the chance to vote out the person at four? But again, this is where you should be punished for voting out a faithful once you get to that final ceremony. There should be something that is taken away from these people as a percentage of the prize money or something like that. And another thing, because you mentioned Kate, something that I think the Traders needs to really not do is bring people in the middle of the game. I think it's stupid, and I think it like really does harm the game, because pretty much when somebody comes in the middle, you almost guarantee that they're not going to be a trader because they don't know what's been going on the entire time. They don't even know who the other traders are. Maybe they could be recruited as a trader like we saw Kate last season, but they're a safe faithful and they have too much power. They don't have a lot of information, but they have a lot of power when they come into the game of just being able to point fingers at whoever they want because everybody knows that they're not one of the traders. So I hate bringing people in the middle of games as it is. And I think that the traders is one type of game where like you really should not be doing that.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me as much because like the team faithful is usually it's like a big team. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, probably it's better not to. Like if you can just get your cast all playing and interacting together earlier, why don't you do that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what value it adds other than to be like, get the fan base reinvigorated, re-excited. Like we just, it's like a new dump. It's like a content dump. I don't know. Or like, you know, when artists release an album and they're like, oh, here's my bonus tracks.
Yeah.
You know, like a week after it's been released just to up the excitement. But I mean, bringing in one cast member, it's not doing much. I'm with you on that one. I don't know if that necessarily is like causing it to feel broken that we're like making a fix. I think that's more of like a suggestion that it's like, I suggest we just lose this.
It just feels unnecessary.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to.
Yes.
It just feels super unnecessary. I don't get it. I don't think it should be there. And like in a game like this, like if somebody came in the middle of a Survivor season, you would hate that. I know this has happened in Big Brother where people come in like a little bit later and stuff like that, but there's no reason for it. And last season, maybe it made sense because Deontay quit. But it just, to me, it was just like, whatever. Like, whatever. You don't need that. It feels like another way of just the show overproducing. And I feel like that's a big thing that the Traders does, is it overproduces rather than just letting it unfold. And yeah, I feel like that's just a big mistake to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's like my last note. I had to make sure I got that in because I hate when they bring people in the middle of the game.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I'm trying to think where else can we improve? We've talked through casting, we've talked through challenges, we talked through the prize pool. We talked through the finale on how we can't reveal at final five. We talked about punishing or rewarding based on the votes. I mean, I think we've covered a lot of ways to improve the format.
I feel pretty good, Will.
I feel pretty good about it. And again, we can talk about all the things we like about the show too. I mean, we love the castle, we love Alan. I love breakfast
always is always a great
it's a great show. Segment.
Yeah.
Love their outfits, and again, I like the actual challenges that they do. I just wish they had meaning. So I mean, the show is doing a lot right. I love when they meet in the turret and they decide and they have to write the name. I guess I can leave you with one more thought. And I don't know. I just don't know on this one. I think it'd be so fun if they blurred the face of one of the traitors. I think they would just, because it's like, you know, two of them, but the third one. So like, let's say season three, Alan taps two people on the shoulder. And then
like, there's a dream wolf.
Dream wolf. Something. I mean, we have all these werewolf mechanics that we could be tossing in. But this is more a mechanic for the audience and not actually a mechanic for the players. The players would still be playing the game the exact same rules and fashion unless we incorporate some of the rules we just talked about. But we get the two people tapping the shoulders. So they tap Phil and Alexa, and then Phil and Alexa get to recruit one person, and then we blur their face and we don't know who it is. It just adds this level of play along for the audience. Again, maybe it's the whole thing with the mole. They just want to stay away from mole comparisons. I don't think they need to worry about that. It's a much more bigger hit and successful than the mole currently is, at least. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What do you think about that? Or is that just too convoluted? Because then you do need to get confessionals from that mole pretending to be a faithful.
I think what could be
sometimes, like, I don't know, kind of breaks the trust of the audience.
If there's two traitors who are making all the decisions in the turret, and then there is the accomplice. What is it in Werewolf? It's the minion. Is that who it is?
It might be the minion.
Yeah, right, where it's like the werewolves. No, because I forget exactly who it is, but like there's the werewolf and there's the person who knows who the werewolves are, but the werewolves don't know who that person is.
Yes. I mean, there's so many roles where it's like, okay, you only win if the werewolves win, mm-hmm. you know?
And like, what if that was a person? Like, what if you had two traitors and then you have a person who is not a traitor, but they're playing on the traitor team. They just don't make the murder decisions. And they win if the traitors win, but they could be murdered by the traitors, and the traitors don't know that this person is actually working with them. So this person has all the information. They know who the traitors are. They know who the faithfuls are, but they still need to navigate this game, and there's a lot that could go wrong for them. I feel like that'd be a really fun addition.
Yeah, I think it's tough with that because it's like they can't tell the traitors that they know who they are, right? That's against the rules. Because in Werewolf, why it works is because you're all sitting in public when you open your eyes, and then you can subtly be like, if I'm the Dream Wolf or whatever that role is, I can look at you and nod and be like, I got you. Like, I know you're you're the werewolf. Whereas here, they can go in a private room and talk, and it's like, wait, are they a traitor? Are they not? I don't know. I think there are definitely a ton of roles they can borrow from One Night Ultimate, Werewolf, Zombie, Alien. Like, so, I mean, they came up with like probably over 150 roles for this type mm-hmm. of game. I'm sure there's at least one or two that do fit into the traders format. Could be a fun podcast to do. We go through every role of those games because there's so many, and be like, how does this fit into the traders? Should we send it to the traders, or is this better for like our, you know, 8-minute one round public tabletop game?
That's a great, I think that's our next traders podcast.
Next podcast. I think that's so fun.
Coming in July. If anybody's wondering what our next podcast is going to be, I think that's a very fun traders podcast of what actually would work in the game setting on a TV show. I'm all in on that podcast. Now we don't have to figure it out. Well, we know. We're ahead of the game. You have anything else, or should we just close this out?
I think that covers it. And what was this, like an hour?
Almost
tight an hour of going through things we want to fix. So I'm good to call it here.
People like it, but I agree with what was said earlier by one of our comments. It was the longevity is what's in question. It was Willie D. If mm-hmm. they don't fix some of these issues right now, you got to hit, but eventually you're gonna have to fix it. Otherwise the longevity
can be gamed.
Yeah, it can be gamed, and that's a problem. So that's how we think you can fix the traders. What do you think about our ideas? Why don't you leave us some comments? Make sure you like this video, subscribe to the channel, and go follow us on Patreon, patreon.com/thespecialist. Right now, our top two tiers are getting Australian Survivor coverage. We're putting out an episode every day of the week, except for Saturday and Sunday. And some Fridays have two episodes, such as this one. We just released Australian Survivor. And then we're also going to be having the Q&A come out later tonight. So we have been really putting out a lot of Patreon content, despite the fact that Survivor is not actually on and the Traitors is not actually on. McKenna and Blake have been killing it over with Big Brother stuff, getting ready for Big Brother 26 to start. And Will and I are going to have some more Survivor stuff coming up. We might have a Peridium podcast in the future. We're working on something for next week. And now you know what our next Traders podcast is going to be. So
I'm more pumped about this new Traders podcast than anything else.
Which I think is fair. I am too, because I love going through those roles. We love that game. We used to play that game nonstop.
I know. And I would always like, it's fun to go through the roles. Be like, whoa, I never thought about that. I mean, some of them get really convoluted. Like there's tokens and you have to like secretly flip it and like, I don't know. We have like the troublemaker who like trades two people's roles and the people don't know it and they have to deduct whether they were swapped or not. Like some of that, I mean, probably a lot of it doesn't work, but I would be shocked if we go through, especially with all the expansions and different versions of the game. Like I said, with Alien and Zombie and Mummies, I don't even know how many versions there were of that One Night franchise, that there has got to be something that's gold in there for the traders. There has to be.
I love it. I love that idea. That's going to be a really fun podcast. I got my little box back there. I don't have the expansion pack. I know you were big with the expansion pack. We can just go through the app anyway. It's going to be a fun podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.